1. Day 1. Alakai Swamp, Kawaikini, Hawaii. Saturday, September 1st, 11:15 a.m. Adrenaline pumped through Calacres's veins as a handheld rock broke loose, and she gripped her waist tie. Tension grew in her gut, and she backtracked. Behind her, Nash, with his tousled sandy brown hair away from his face, drew into form and reached for her hand. He shot her a smirk from a fiercely handsome face. Athletic and chiseled in the right places, his sculpted arms revealed strength. Lean washboard abs tapered to a narrow waist, topped with broad shoulders. He was a man built for the outdoors. "Got to be careful around here," he said in his standard American vernacular. She smiled and glared ahead at Kawaikini, the highest point on the Hawaiian island of Kauai in Kauai County. Most days rain kept the cliffside one of the wettest on Earth, but they'd been lucky. She assessed the views below of the cloud-free day as they surveyed the ocean lookout at 900 meters above sea level. They'd navigated the Alakai Wilderness Preserve for the last 45 minutes by a swamp trail shrouded in mist, then trudged by the Pehe Vista Trail connected to the Pu'uokila lookout on Waimea Canyon. Kala followed Nash to the end of the path overlooking Hanalei Bay, the largest on Kauai Island's north shore. Her eyes caught 2 miles of beach, a mooring for sailboats bordered by mountains. She breathed in the mist of the clouds as they approached the edge. At over 5,000 feet in elevation, she observed a gushing waterfall in the distance. 72 hours ago, they docked on Kawaikini Island. Nash and Jack had suggested the holiday thanks to a new yacht, a 553-foot-long flagship beauty and one Kala called a floating digital extravagance. She was grateful for it, though, a gift to them from her father Stan Kress, a former MI6 agent. It was safer for them to have a mobile home. One that lacked no expense thanks to Stan's wealth and unlimited funds. Original and futuristic, the yacht, named Scorpion Tide, reminded one of a stealth warship or submarine converted into a floating luxury or an armed hotel. They reached the clearing leading to the summit of the island's inactive shield volcano. Why had she let Nash talk her into this hike? He watched her curiously. Nash never failed to astound her. At 6'3", his lean build and posture spoke of years of military discipline, though that didn't rob him of the sparkle in his engaging deep grey eyes. He'd learned firsthand the tactics of military intelligence. The military also introduced Nash to humanitarian work, and he once participated in delivering several hundred tons of emergency food, tents, and medical supplies to North Korea. Occasionally, although he only told those close to him, he acted as a security advisor to the government. Nash had been living in London on and off for the last 3 years, immersed in classified intelligence analysis as a US representative for ISTF, a secret spy organization, the International Security Task Force. Attacks showed ISTF that criminals could compromise and control millions of computers that belonged to governments, private enterprises, and ordinary citizens. But not only networks, anything digitally connected was a threat, and ISTF ensured that their operating systems were superior to most governments' data spy centers. Kala gave Nash a reassuring smile and moved away from the other two. "You still thinking about it?" she asked Nash. "About what?" "The technology you destroyed. Worth billions. I saw the classified NSA debrief on your computer this morning." Nash shot her a cocky grin. "They'll never find out. I destroyed it. Nothing more. They're pinning it on internal moles. It's the one thing that the NSA should never have gotten involved in, your life. They pissed me off when they messed with you." He drew her to him and circled his arms tightly around her. "I promised I would always protect you. We've lost a lot, you and me." They rarely discussed her miscarriage. "Hey, soldier," Kala said. "Thank you." His fingers stroked the length of her neck, then came to rest on the pulse in her throat. He covered her upturned face with a gentle, warm kiss. "They mess with you, beautiful, they mess with me." Jack shoved between them and sneered. "Cut it out, you two. This is my vacation, too." A deep-throated laugh left Nash's lips as he progressed with his best friend. Calla shook her head. Jack and Nash were ridiculously absurd together and smartest together, a contagious camaraderie with which Calla was at ease. They edged to the ridgeline and a gust of wind wafted past them. It was a welcome interruption, keeping them cool as they advanced to the safest point on the edge of the cliff, their boots digging the ground. Something was new about Jack. He'd been dating Mary for 2 months, one reason they'd all come to the island. Not sure how she felt, Calla had been selfish with Jack. He'd watched her and Nash for years. She should have been grateful. He was happy. Calla turned back toward Mary, a new acquaintance. She was a stunning Hawaiian beauty, credit to the Aloha spirit, with hair thick and full and soft-toned tan skin. Calla hoped the wind wouldn't topple her delicate frame. Mary was a new acquaintance and had spent her life jumping aquamarine waves and perhaps watching meteor showers on white sand beaches. Jack approached and took Mary's hand. They'd been trekking for close to 3 hours, but now as they reached the edge, Calla dug her fingernails into her palms to disguise her nervousness for Mary. Mary's eyes bulged. She examined the variety of equipment prepped by two experts they'd hired for the hang gliding drop over one side of the cliff, a steep plunge into oblivion. Jumping was how they were getting off Kawaikini and onto the yacht, meticulously planned by Nash, and a route accurately calculated by Jack's mathematical mind. Conflicting emotions ran through Calla's mind as a silent question lingered in Mary's eyes. She was as exposed as a rabbit crossing a ploughed field with a hawk circling overhead. A pang of pity gnawed at Calla's conscience. Mary wasn't used to running around with these two. Both men could stand head and shoulders above most military men with the field agents' training they'd received from both the US and British governments and others. "I think we need to take a break," Calla said. "Mary might need it." Mary had spent most of her life embracing outdoor beach life, not this. Ebony eyes with centers so dark they gleamed like volcanic rock stared at Calla. Mary's gaze then focused on the aluminum frame covered with synthetic sailcloth to form a large wing. Four hang gliders waited by two busy engineers. "Jack, did you get Mary the right beginner's gear?" Calla asked. "Sure. Besides, we each have earpiece wireless communication and will be in contact." Mary took a grip of the handhold along the path and sank onto a boulder for a quick sip of water. She must have known by now what was to happen. The two hang glider specialists prepared the equipment that would allow them to soar for hours. They could maintain altitude in thermal updrafts up to thousands of feet. Calla veered to Mary and took a seat beside her. "You've got to hand it to these two. They like a good venture," she said, staring down at Mary's hands. "Hope those nails will hold." Mary's eyes widened. "Are you going on that?" Calla studied the men adjust the built-in dive mechanisms and harnesses. "Sure. It's safe." "Here," Calla said, "how about I tell them you won't do it? I can stay with you." Mary shook her head. "No, I think I need to go." "It's Jack, isn't it?" Calla said. "You like him, don't you, and would go over that cliff to prove it?" "You don't have to, Mary. Jack's one of the best guys out there, and he won't hold it against you." The men spoke to the specialists and gripped each glider by their pod harnesses. Both were trained helicopter pilots. Calla could deal with heights. She embraced altitudes most times. She took in the mild gusts brewing beyond the clouds. The skies were cloud-free. Calla reached around her neck and handed Mary her silk scarf as Jack made his way over to them. "Thanks," Mary said. "I didn't realize when I came to this island it would be in search of the right winds. I've been on beaches all my life. Mostly Honolulu, and as a marine biologist, I mostly live underwater." Mary shivered and she took Jack's hand. "I hope you don't think I'll be jumping off this mountain. I'll ruin something." "I know it. I thought this was just supposed to be a relaxing holiday for my birthday." Nash approached the two. "Is that what he told you? Relaxing isn't the word I'd use." Mary frowned, but determination blazed in her eyes. She wouldn't back down. Calla wondered what facing her greatest fear with the courage would be like. She reached out her hand and helped Mary to her feet.
You'll have a parachute. Don't overthink it.
Clouds gathered and the wind found a new direction. Calla knew commotion was running through Mary's mind. Once the gliders moved from the precipitation zone, they'd be okay. Maybe that would ease her. Calla rose, bringing Mary with her.
Hey, you can go with Jack or Glenn, the instructor, if you want.
No, I'll do this alone.
Good.
They marched to the flying equipment. Jack and Nash busied themselves with their hang gliders and set down their packs. Jack turned to the women.
Are we all ready?
A faint wind slapped Calla's cheek when the clouds moved away from the cliff as if on cue.
Okay, the clouds have cleared. This is where you take off, Glenn said.
They picked up the gear and suited up. The group zipped up pod harnesses, threw on wind jackets, and prepped the leg portions that would tail behind them during launch. Glenn slipped cocoon harnesses over their heads that would lie in front of their legs. Once airborne, they were to tuck their feet into the cocoon. Their knee hanger harnesses clipped on, and Glenn tightened Calla's shoulder straps for launch. Movement drew Calla's eye. She peered past a moving cloud where the sound of a chopper's blades overhead drew her attention. Calla thought little of it as Jack hollered at them and glanced at Mary.
How about you come with me?
Mary shook her head.
I'm nervous.
Not so sure, Jack.
Calla turned her attention back to her friends. She thought the world of Jack, but this wasn't the right date for Mary. Jack should have known better.
Mary snapped on her helmet. I've never been asked to jump off any mountain. Most of my life has not involved gravitational challenges.
Jack winked at her.
Well, when you hang around these two, there are many gravitational challenges, he said with a grin.
Calla met Jack's smile with hers, but with one look at Mary, she noted the tear in her eye, and it wasn't the wind. They heard a pounding of feet as Nash raced to the edge and sprang from the ground-based tow system. In one sudden movement, he vaulted off the cliff. Calla charged after him and leaped off the side of the cliff. Jack hurtled off behind them. As the glider took height, Calla slid back into the seat to a seated position. She circled the edge, then raised her head above her handbar. Below, Mary stood frozen. Something had prevented her. Calla winced and kept pace behind Jack and Nash.
The three gliders soared over the Hawaiian landscape from the central volcano on the island of Kauai to the lake at the northern end of the summit rim.
Jack and Calla pulled their gliders alongside each other, and Nash advanced before them. They needed the sun's intense rays to sustain heat, and a thin layer of high cloud was welcome for smooth flying. Sparkles of sunlight glistened off the Pacific Ocean that spread below them like a verdant of blue. They circled above the ridgeline until Calla caught sight of the earlier helicopter. It headed for their path until it was overhead. The chopper's blades made Calla lose her stability, and a gust from its rotating propellers vacillated above them. Calla scrutinized it. Three suited men dropped from the aircraft with ropes and shoulder harnesses. She reached for her belt and turned on her communication earpiece to Nash and Jack.
Jack, Nash, she said.
11 o'clock. We have company.
Nash's voice came on the line.
Unwanted, I would say.
Calla's eyebrow raised.
Care to outrun them?
Before either man could respond, cold terror gripped Calla. The suspended intruders circled Nash's glider. The ambush descended into Nash's fly zone. He angled his glider away from them. The first attacker, masked with a visor and suspended from the chopper's open side, hurtled on Nash's wingspan and raised what looked like an army knife. He sliced the blade twice through the wing until a large slit appeared and sloped the wing sideways.
Jack.
Calla called through her earpiece.
Nash is in trouble.
He can't see them, the chopper's in his blind spot.
One of us needs to take the one above and the other should grab Nash, Jack said.
All right, Calla said.
I'll get Nash.
She nosed her glider toward Nash's position, then slanted the edge of her wing until it collided with a second attacker who'd now descended within reach. The man flopped unconscious and dangled from the helicopter's suspended cord. A third man descended into the mix. Kala edged her glider in his flight path. He avoided her grasp and Jack zeroed in toward Nash. Kala glanced above when Jack drifted close to Nash. The first man secured Nash's glider to a rope on the helicopter. Nash released his harness and detached himself from the glider now held by the chopper's cable, ready to join Kala's glider. Above them, a helicopter's wind path was out of range, allowing Kala to float closer to Nash. She loosened a security rope from her harness pouch and attached it to her hand grip. The first attacker, still balancing on his glider secured to the chopper, reached for Nash's midriff. With his grip firm around Nash, he kicked the wing free, and it floated toward the ocean. "Nash," Kala called in his earpiece.
"It's okay, beautiful. I'm all right."
Her distance from Nash forbade Kala to see without obstruction. They weren't there to harm Nash. Someone would have pulled a trigger on the guns they carried. They wanted something from him, and shoved what she assumed was a satellite phone to Nash's ear. Muffling sounded through Kala's earpiece.
"Jack, are you on?" she said.
"Yeah."
A deep voice came on in their earpieces. "Call for you, Shields." Nash couldn't move. The man turned up the speaker. Nash remained immobile as he listened. "Shields, I need you to report to Camp Silverfield with the woman they call the Decryptor." Nash took in a sharp breath. "Couldn't you find another time to make a request, Mr. President?"
"You're a difficult man to find."
"How did you do it?" Nash said. "Took us 2 weeks, but even you leave a digital footprint," the President said. "I'll keep that in mind next time I'm in Washington. What do you want?"
"Can't disclose the full details on this line," the President said. "But I want you in Camp Silverfield ASAP. The Secret Service holding the phone to your ear will bring you in."
Anger welled in Kala. The Secret Service was a long way from the President. And why Nash?
"What if I refuse?"
Nash said. "I'm afraid that's a privilege you don't have."
"Try me," Nash said.
Kala and Jack couldn't stay in place for long. They kept circling Nash's position, staying on course with him and the chopper. The first agent placed a firearm to Nash's temple. Though Jack and Nash carried ISTF-issued P226 Sig Sauer handguns, the height they were at and their disadvantage against a helicopter meant they could only watch.
"I'll make my way there," Nash said, anger evident in his tone. "But not with your Secret Service."